Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
So I got this new Blackstone griddle, 36 inch or two, big one, four burners.
Attaboy, I got the Blackstone. Let's go. Oh,
you got one too?
Yeah, I got a Blackstone. I love the Blackstone.
Oh man.
Flat top, man.
Yep. It is amazing. I love, I made breakfast on it.
Did you?
The next day that I had it. First day that I had it, so I woke up at 9. My wife and kid were gone. They went back to her parents' house for hang out with the river or whatever for the day. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, she got me this thing, an early Father's Day present. I'm putting it together. I wake up at 9, right? I take a shower. And I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. So I started like 9:15, Adam. I start putting this thing together. And then I said, then I'm going to season it. Then I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to get some steak. I'm going to come back. I'm going to put the steak on the smoker. And then I'm going to take it right from my Traeger smoker and throw it right on and just sear it on the Blackstone. Oh, and then that's kind of what I really wanted for, because I didn't want to smoke up the house like when I do in a cast iron and I do that final sear.
Forty chess. Yeah. 40 chess. Huh. 40 chess. Let's get it.
Yo, is that T-Dog?
40 chess. Huh. 40 chess. Hey, hey, 40 chess, this a trade show. Patreon where the trades go, tapping and watch. That's what you came for. Ain't gotta say my name, they know my name, bro.
What's good, man?
We got McNutted in ATM. Always start off the show with a trade from them. You should always make sure that your trade is in. Patreon, why not be a Patreon? Know you wish you could spend every day with them. Tap in and say what you gonna say with them. South Harmon can fill up a stadium. Next time you log in, make sure that you bring a friend. We about to kick off, let the day begin. Go follow the socials. 40 chess FF is posted. If your trade is an F, you get roasted. Go like and subscribe for the crew. Apple, Spotify, and the YouTube. You know Cooper got the walk too. Let us give you a walkthrough. 40 chess. This is 40 chess.
Tour. Honestly, that's terrible. The house smells terrible.
And it that scent lingers for forever.
Wife complains, so I was like, this is what I'm going to do. Adam, I didn't eat the steak until 2:30. That's how long it took me to put the thing together, get to the store, get the steak, get it, see the whole thing. I was like, man, I spent like all day doing this. I'm sweaty.
Preparation, man. Sometimes people don't realize, you know, when you're putting something together and you're making something really good, the amount of time prep takes to make it really, really well done. But let's hear, how was the outcome, man?
The steak was fantastic. It was everything I ever wanted. Then I did breakfast the next day. You got four burners, so, you know, potatoes O'Brien, you got some eggs, you got bacon, you got sausage, the whole thing. And you're out there with my little scoops, my little spatulas, metal spatulas. It felt awesome. Absolutely. Then today I did burgers. So 3 days in a row I've used this thing. Been a hell of a Memorial Day weekend. Just me and my Blackstone.
The Blackstone, man, I feel like, If you know, you know. Meaning, like, if you've seen someone that used it, or if you've used it in capacities, you understand. But I think the more underrated part about it, anyway, is the versatility. People don't really understand that you can use it for so many different type of cooking ideas. But obviously, for me, Mike, I mean, I have a lot of things I've used it for. But just I love the fact that I can go at one time, like if I want to make just some chicken, but I can also put, you know, peppers, onion, all different types of stuff on there all at once, and then boom, it's ready to rock all at one time when it's ready to go. So I don't have to have, like, sometimes when people are cooking multiple things at once, trying to have it all come out at the same time, so it's not all cold. That's one of the best things about the Blackstone too, is you can kind of keep everything fresh or cook it in different temperatures at different spots.
I gotta take some hibachi lessons and figure out how to do my own hibachi at home. I gotta do that.
Listen, if we get Mike, the hibachi chef, out there, I'm going to be drinking, what is that called, sake at no regard for human life, you know?
I'll put it in the squirt bottle.
Yeah. One, right two, three, four. Come on, keep going.
Start doing some egg juggling.
Dude, this actually has me in the mood for hibachi all of a sudden. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm hungry for hibachi. But speaking of versatility, Dynasty Berry, again, part three of rookie hit rates. DB has improved this beyond all shadow of a doubt. Okay, DB is the man. What he's done, Adam, because got a lot of questions and some pushback from various people on the last couple. Yeah, Mike, what about? What I'm trying to point out, Adam, in conversations with you and this hit rate chart, is we can really bury the whole analysis on rookies and just get right down to the data. We can get right down to the data and tell you at the base core, unless you're making exceptions or you just really like a guy, that's where your argument's going to come from, why you take one position over another outside of this data. So what the first one was, Adam, what about top 10 draft capital? Like players drafted within the top 10, how does that change hit rates? Because that really says that, yeah, NFL takes you in the top 10, right? Like that's a big deal, right? So maybe instead of lumping all these wide receivers together as just round one guys, let's separate them. Who went in the top 10 and how did that change hit rates? So DB did it. DB gave us an S tier. I love it. S tier. Not round one. Like S tier.
The S tier. There we go.
We'll start right at the top, though. Quarterbacks drafted in this S tier. Well, top 10 draft capital. Again, going back to 2019 through 2023. Oh, that was the other thing DB changed. In your first three seasons, too. We're going to stop excluding the guys who were in 2022 or 2023 who didn't make this list. Right? Because they didn't have a full 3 years. If you made it at all, first or second year, you're in here. You're in here as a hit. So this is all the draft classes now. Quarterbacks drafted with top 10 draft capital in their first three seasons to hit a top six season, 36%, Adam. Very good. Very good. Wide receivers, 20%. So yes. To anyone who was asking about wide receivers, yes, you're much more likely, if you listen to the last part of the show, the numbers weren't as great for wide receivers to hit that top six within the first three seasons. Tougher to do, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're drafted in the top 10, much different than if you're just drafted in round one, it almost doubles your chances at wide receiver. So 20% to 11%. That's a big deal. Big key takeaway.
Yep.
So what I can tell you right off the rip is I still favor quarterbacks, Adam, but if you're a wide receiver drafted with top 10 NFL draft capital, we should be paying attention to you. And we need to stop making excuses for those guys who go 15, 17, 19. You're just lumped in with everybody else in the first round. It doesn't matter for you. Top 10 is the cutoff, the exception point.
I've been kind of – that's kind of been my echoing statement, honestly. Like, if you gave me my off-season, you know, sentence, Mike – or, you know, group of sentences, that would have been it. Like, there's the bet of a first-round receiver versus the S-tier prospects with the correct draft capital association. I think there is a invaluable difference of those two things. And to your point, like, Treylon Burks is a perfect example. You might have thought he was an S-tier guy, but the moment that he not only didn't go top 10, you couldn't even make the argument, like, top 12. He fell to 18, right? Like, it's...
Yeah.
And also, you could argue, too, that who knows if the slide isn't even further if Tennessee wasn't trying to basically, you know, 4D chess the thing and move A.J. Brown and try to have him fill the role. But to the point of you're making, if you're an elite prospect, I also think I love this list, Mike, because it does say top 10, and that's a big, humongous differentiator. Now, I'm sure we can go back and find some throughout. Now, not necessarily in these classes, but yeah, over time. But if you also check this box, Mike, of top 10, plus I love your prospect profile, we believe you're one of those. That, with the current market that we're in, but is why I'm so high on these guys. But to this list, I'm excited to dive into these numbers because I think this will speak a lot better for people understanding that even still, doesn't make you impossible to bust if you're one of those receivers, but it's a much different conversation.
And reminder, this is just the last five draft classes too that we're looking at. So recent history, We can go look at the rates for everybody, and it's going to be worse.
Right.
But that was another one of the arguments is like, well, what about maybe the NFL is getting better? We're getting better.
Right. Sure.
I had this pushback. I will say the numbers still shake out for quarterbacks to hit like that elite tier, that first round startup tier, top six. Like that means something. But to your point where you had some pushback, Adam, like your argument makes a lot more sense looking at just the last five classes. Looking at first three-year hit rates when you get down to top 12 or top 24. So top 10 drafted wide receivers in the NFL in the last five draft classes have hit a top 12 season in their first 3 years at a 60% clip, which is really good.
Outrageously good.
Really good. Now, it's not saying they're going to be Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson tier, but Chris Olave types, yes.
Right.
Like, you can be in that mix, which is good for you. Quarterbacks with top 10 draft capital do it, and they still do it at a fairly safe clip of 45%, but not to the wide receivers to hit that top 12 mark. And then once you get down to top 24, that value insulation, the kind of what we were talking about with wide receivers, top 24 is the cutoff. Top 10 draft capital wide receivers, those S-tier guys, do it at an 80% clip over the last 5 years. 80% clip.
Yeah.
You can get behind those numbers.
Yeah, I mean, because just on the first one, like, at that 60%, like, if you told me right now that two of these three that I'm going to consider in this mix, which is Marv, Rome, and Malik, if you tell me two of those three are going to be a top 12, are going to be top 12 receiver finishes in production?
Within their first 3 years, yep.
Given what we understand of what their market is, Mike, that's... That bet is a great one for me, and I like that bet a lot.
Now, if I want to look at it historically, now we'll look at all draft classes going back to 2007, DB's original data, the numbers become far worse for wide receivers. So sure. Just to put on that point, it does. When you look at just the last 5 years, different. You look at all the years, the NFL used to miss on a lot of these top 10 drafted wide receivers far more often because they only hit top 12 at a 41% clip. With top 10 draft capital.
I think one of the biggest examples, Mike, to speak to, I think what, now, this doesn't mean that, for the record, this does not mean what I'm going to say here. This doesn't mean that NFL teams don't miss and they don't still take receivers that shouldn't go super high, very high. But, like, to me, this year is a perfect way to compare the improvement of this. Xavier Worthy, Mike, breaks the record, which was previously held by whom? John Ross. Xavier Worthy didn't go top 10. John Ross, because of that 40, didn't even have the profile Xavier Worthy did and went top 10, right? Like, I feel like that is like a good comparison of, like, the NFL, I think, is getting a little better as a whole. Doesn't mean that they don't still miss or take guys they shouldn't, but at pinpointing, I think, metrics that are, yeah, it's really cool if a guy runs 4.22. But Darius Hayward, these guys shouldn't be going outrageously high just because they ran a great 40. Like, it should help, but not by that much.
It's kind of crazy as the fantasy industry as a whole has gotten bigger and there's been more money involved in it. And, you know, you got more high stakes tournaments and, you know, underdog is really prevalent. And as, like, we've gone along, there's been more content about it. There's been more discussion about it, but analytics has really taken off, right? Like, a way to evaluate. This is essentially what we're talking about right here, like cutting through the nonsense and looking at it, right? That has taken off. Wouldn't the same be said, at least for the NFL, over the course of the last 20-some years? Like, they make more money, as it becomes a bigger thing, as you have more money to hire, you know, kids fresh out of college who they might not know football from basketball, but what they can tell you is the difference in numbers. They can tell you, hey, looking at this prospect, there's no way you should take this guy in the top 10 with draft capital versus taking him at 32.
Now, or the
second round.
One of the things that I think will forever be now a big push and pull is, you know, how do analytics blend in and how do we not have it over-consumed to the point where it's you're doing things based on analytics that maybe don't make common sense. But there's a big push and pull, but you can go and see right now. Like, they do articles based on how prevalent analytics are per teams in the NFL to show you not just were they more non-existent. Now it's how heavily are they being utilized per sport, per NFL team, which is to the point, I think, overall, it's very, very prevalent now for even teams that don't use it. They, relative to other teams, they still use analytics. It's just on a smaller clip than most, but Let's take a look at this data. I'm pretty excited about this.
So this is just the last 5 years. I wanted to look at quarterbacks with that S-tier draft capital. Herbert, Stroud, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones. It's crazy to think about, too. Just I remember those rookie drafts, and you were getting them in the second round.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Joe Burrow, Tua, Trevor Lawrence, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, Zach Wilson, and Trey Lance. It's not bad, though. What was the hit rate again for those guys in the last 5 years for S-tier? 36% will hit a top six. And 45% will hit a top 12. Not bad. It feels about right.
I think what's interesting, though, to that number, Mike, I guess what I was picking out and what I'm reading through this, because I think it's starting to kind of make sense where the difference really from top six to top 12 wasn't that different, right? 36, 45. I think here's the reality. There's going to be some guys that bust huge. That's not even that different from the receiver position too, right? That's just, you're going to see huge, but Mike, what we do have is probably in this group, if you have the profile, whether right now we believe it or not, that probably will end up becoming a little more hindsight 2020, and people won't remember not loving the prospect. But if you do hit here, top 12, top six, maybe not that different, but the ones that do hit, more than likely, you'll know. The problem is, I think we got to talk about at some point too. And this was, I don't know if we do it here or not. I think we got to talk about the ones that don't, for both receivers and quarterbacks, but especially for quarterbacks, because there's six top 12 quarterbacks this year. The ones that don't hit this list at some point, how do we talk about, like, realistically knowing these numbers now?
Yeah.
Kind of like, Mike, when they first started building buildings, right? They didn't have fire escapes. They didn't understand. Like, things can happen. So if the fire happens, what's the escape route, and what does that look like for us down the road? I think it would be maybe a future episode or something to talk about. Like, how do you get out of them so you don't get completely burnt? Zach Wilson's, Trey Lance's. But overall, the ones that hit to the point, dude, like, Joe Burrow has been a monster. Elite of elite. Kyler Murray, elite of elite. C.J. Stroud, even if he hasn't hit the production yet, people are valuing him elite of elite. So
Justin Herbert.
A. Rich hasn't even done it for anything but a few games, and
yep,
valued very highly. So the ones that do hit that 36 to 45%, top six, top 12, not saying there isn't a difference there, but if you in those first 3 years hit that range, that's the ultra valued type of players in Dynasty.
He got nobody at the running back position over the last 5 years.
Well, the only players that have been inside the top 10 is just Bijan, no? The last 10 years, you say, or five? Sorry,
5 years. Just looking at the last 5 years, it would just be Bijan.
Yeah, and Arthur Smith ruins the data, frankly.
He's got to ruin all the fun, doesn't he?
Arthur Smith will forever live on, you know.
So your S-tier wide receivers, top 10 draft capital guys, very small list: Chase Waddle, Garrett Wilson, Devontae Smith, and Drake London.
Can I tell you two? Here, I want to hear your thoughts on this. Go ahead.
It's smaller sample size than the quarterbacks by more than half, yeah. Like 11 to 5. It's a big difference between the two. So you can skew the numbers however you want. I mean, that's kind of how it goes into play. But listen, the percentage is the percentage. So that's the way it is. And I will say, just for the majority, right, Chase has been a massive hit. Yeah. That's why when you look at it as far as top six goes, Adam, there's only been one guy. And it's been Ja'Marr Chase.
Sure.
The rest of them haven't. I don't know if you can say, like, have they even sniffed that elite territory yet? Like, they've had wide receiver one finishes, but those kind of, all those guys, right? Garrett Wilson, Smitty,
Jalen Waddle did, even in production. His first and second year, he was, his first year had all that target volume, remember? The second year, but the first year he didn't have very much efficiency. In the second year, Mike, though, he went bananas. Like 8 touchdowns and all that. 1.6 or 7 warp. Yeah.
Yeah, so 1.675 is rookie year. His second year was 1.688.
Right. So Mike, just stick with me here now on this with Waddle. And why I think people hate how much we push back. But we push back because Tyreek's not going to be leaving anytime soon that we can predict.
He wasn't even as good as Smitty's second year, though.
No, but if he, but what I want to say about him here is, look at how realistically in Warp for three seasons, if you average him out, he's over 1.5.
Yeah, he's been about the same. Yep.
Do you know there's only really one person on this list that would make that average 1.5 over 3 years?
Chase.
That's Jamar Chase.
Yep.
So that's where I think probably when we push back on Waddle, that's where you get a lot of pushback the other way. I'll say this too. One thing about this tier, which is so interesting to me, you made a good point. It's a small sample size. But I think the reason I think that that's so good to highlight and understand is because it's also the NFL is telling you why. Think about how much more they're passing. Think about how much more the NFL values receivers than they used to. But there's still only this sample size in the top 10.
Yeah.
Like that to me, I think is another thing to note is guys that are getting drafted at receiver in the top 10, like they feel really strong about these players. It's not saying that they won't, but I think teams, for example, the Cardinals, what did they do? They stayed pat at 3, where they could have probably gotten a significant haul, and they just took Marv. The guys that are being drafted that highly, teams really strongly believe in, because what's one of the easier things that you can do is trade out of a 5, a 4, a 6, an 8, and go back to 12, 15, and still get a receiver. But they're valuing those things, I think, a lot differently because they strongly believe in those guys. And if you look at the list, it's a small sample size, I think, because there's only that many that they've felt this strongly about taking there. And the one thing about it, yep, to the point that I guess I want to say with the receivers, go to that list again real quick. I just wanted to highlight this part. Because to your point, when I look at this data, the guys that actually hit. Now, defining what a hit is, we could talk about the different ones. But like Jamar Chase has been a hit in a meaningful way. Jalen Waddle, I'd even argue, still definitely has been. Same with Smitty. Now, the other guys, which really only leaves Garrett Wilson and Drake London. What's the picture with those guys?
Two years
of bad quarterback play, but not just that. 2 years of really, if they didn't have those names attached to them, we'd hate these guys. Like if they weren't this young and they weren't this promising players.
They didn't have that draft capital tied to them.
Yeah. Right. But Mike, that's the crazy part to me. Think about that. I think I want to say that from the quarterback position, at least the way that the market's viewing things. Like, if we had 2 years of very disappointing stuff for quarterbacks, do you know what happens going into year three? They're either already moved on, or I couldn't sell them to you, probably. Maybe, yep, I could. But point is that the community's going to hate them. And the wide receiver position, it's like the opposite. Maybe I got to give them one more year. So I think the three-year thing for those type of receivers is very interesting because, like, Malik Nabers, I think, is such a picture of this where – I don't know what the production is going to be. I could see him being good enough to produce. But if he didn't produce in the meaningful Warp tier, you know damn well we're going to be arguing Daniel Jones and all this stuff. Like, that's what the community currently is doing, right or wrong. So I wanted to highlight that point.
I think that's a big one. It's also similar to just how the NFL does it and how we've kind of all come to assume it. Now, the fantasy community, like you said, we shit on these guys after a couple of years. And even the NFL is looking to move on with quarterbacks after a couple of years. Wide receivers, it feels like they usually give them time, like they usually do. Just because there's not that that pressure on it, right? Like, nobody ever goes at the end of the season analysis on ESPN saying, like, the reason this team lost is because their wide receiver wasn't playing well.
Sure.
No. Sure. Everybody's going to blame the quarterback. It's the quarterback. It's quarterback's fault. If he would have done this different, he would have done that. And rightfully so. Those are the guys who get paid, you know, $40, $50 million a year contracts. Those are the guys everybody looks to. But that's kind of the way we look at it. But we already understood that the NFL, if they draft you as a quarterback within the first 10 picks, they too, just like wide receivers, are saying something about you.
For sure. Like,
we needed you for a reason. Which really opens up the Michael Penix discussion where you're like, what? Okay. Listen, I don't think it was a great pick. I don't think there's anybody out there besides maybe the guy who made it in Atlanta is going to argue that that was a good pick for them.
Sure. Well, I think it was highly questioned because the way that the contract structure, no one really dug into the deep dive of it because Atlanta was so quarterback barren. Nobody really even, I think, dug into the fact that they could get out in a couple seasons. It's 4 years, 180. Everyone's just like, that's their guy. And then you start digging into it and you start thinking about it a little more. Not saying that they made the correct pick, but I can see 100% where they're coming from with the pick. And I think this Penix one's going to be a good discussion. So let's hear what you got to say.
I just think with draft capital, with fantasy hit rates, the whole thing, as far as 3-year data set goes, that's somebody when you take them at the, what, I mean, some of these, we're getting them at 205. At anywhere you take them from 110 on, Adam, I think when you take Michael Penix, I think it's a long-term bet, and you're betting on the NFL being right as a whole and everything we know. And I think it's a very reasonable bet to have, which is why I make it more times than not. Because we're not talking about drafting Michael Penix over Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze. That's not what the conversation we're having, are we? Not a top 10 drafted NFL wide receiver with the last 5 years of data. We're talking about a top 10 drafted quarterback. So it's in its own bucket. And we're talking about that burst. Just any other wide receiver taken in round one, where if we want to just look at the 5-year hit rate charts for any other wide receiver taken in round one, Adam, how about only hitting top 12 within their first 3 seasons at an 11% clip for anybody not named Drake London, Jalen Waddle, Ja'Marr Chase, Garrett Wilson, Devontae Smith?
So that's... I got you. So the differentiator factor here was, and this speaks exactly to what I've been arguing for. So we're saying 60% of receivers, S tier, we call that top 10 draft capital, versus 11%. It's round one that is not that, correct?
I'm no math expert, but that's damn near 50% decline.
That's a, well, and to that point, not only is it it's a 50% decline from 60%, it's a nosedive cliff. It's a straight down. It's a Millennium Force type roller coaster ride, buddy. Straight down.
Much bigger sample size, and that sample size has shit on you multiple times within the last 5 years.
Yeah. Now, Mike, can I tell you one of the things that I think is really, really interesting, too, about Penix? That's going to speak a little differently than just this data does, but I don't want to get off of that. I don't want to pivot to that until you finish any thoughts you had about Penix versus the receivers.
That was it, right?
Okay.
I am all here for healthy discussion and debate, specifically when I'm on the, listen, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, you know, like I want to take quarterbacks even over Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers. I think that is a healthy debate to have where I don't think either side is necessarily wrong. Listen, I look at the data now for top 10 hit rates and I go, damn, man. Adam's been making some good points, right? They're not all just conjecture. Like, the data actually backs it up if you look at a 5-year window. If I look at going back to 2007, I'm in the right. If I look at just the last 5 years, Adam's in the right. Then you factor in dynasty market. And we both bring up good points about, listen, this is what happens for a quarterback. We had Thomas on. Thomas talked about this same thing. What happens for a quarterback, even like Bryce Young, if he has a bad year in his rookie year, where does he go the next year? It's not that big of a fall. The wide receiver can be a bigger fall, but they still do have a nice cushion. I think where it becomes where, like, I get upset is when we have the debate about specifically a Michael Penix with top 10 draft capital by the NFL versus a wide receiver that does not have top 10 draft capital. That people are like, you got to take Brian Thomas. You got to take Xavier Worthy. You got to take Keon Coleman or Xavier Leggett or Ricky Pearsall. No. No, the fuck you don't. No, you don't. And I think that's the bad bet. I don't care how your team is positioned in your rookie draft where you're like, I'm just a wide receiver away. One thing we do know about rookies, specifically, Adam, if you're relying on rookies to be that production in year one, you're fucking doing it wrong anyways, right? So you're not just a wide receiver away. Like, that wide receiver you're going to draft more than likely isn't going to fix your team and all of a sudden make you a contender. That's a bad bet in its own right. And then if you just want to look about long-term dynasty value, long-term market play, long-term hit rate, when is X player versus X player, when are they going to be worth the most and what can I get out of them at that time to maybe get that wide receiver to make me a contender in 2025? It's not going to be fucking Brian Thomas or Xavier Worthy, Adam. It's not. It's not. Everything should be telling you that it's going to be Michael Penix versus anything else. And I think that's where I have the frustration about the conversation in rookie draft specifically is when you get to that quarterback wide receiver debate. Because I don't think it's much of a debate at all.
Now, okay. Now, what convolutes this? To that rant you just went on. That has been my mission statement this whole damn offseason, is exactly that. And now, here's the problem. And this is where I think movements can be, for people that don't really understand the depths of it, like don't go this deep dives on numbers or think about what's happening. You're just, now it's kind of, you're just chasing the positional thing that at the time feels cool for everything. Everybody feels great about the receiver. At a certain point, you're now chasing the position. Now, here's the problem. In a way, it's the blind leading the blind still, because the market value is such a softly cushioned blow for these guys that don't produce. Now, that is where the wide receiver versus the quarterback, to the point we can look at numbers that say, well, yeah, Bryce Young had a hell of a fall, but even still, he's, if that's what the worst fall is, it's not like he died, right? So, but because the viewpoint is where it is now, the view is the quarterbacks that miss are going to fall tremendously, which, not saying that they won't fall, but the wide receivers still can. But even the worst ones, I mean, see JMO, see these guys, like, somehow there's still people that believe. So the problem is some of the blind leading the blind with that. Because I think that's what's caused the fallacy error being drafting those. Now, one thing I wanted to do to speak to that point, because the Penix one, and I did a very, very deep dive on Penix. Mike, Penix for me is so clearly becoming the one, I'm like the Neo. And I made a whole video talking about, he's the single best pick in this entire class. And you've already highlighted some great, great points. And now, for the record, that's at value. Okay. I'm not saying Penix should be your 101, but I'm saying Penix being in the round two of rookie drafts, or even at the late first, it's just an error. He's a great, that yes. value is better than Caleb at the 101, because everybody knows it should be Caleb at the 101, or Marv at the 101, or Marv at the 102, whatever, right? We know that. We know Jaden should be a top three pick. People believe that Michael Penix should be a 207. That's where the value falls. The reason I think that's so crazy is that I want you to follow me here. Just stay away from this data for a second. We're going to come right back to it. Follow me here when I give you the quarterbacks. When we read through these in the top 12, all right? 101, Patrick Mahomes. 102, Josh Allen. 103, CJ Stroud. 104, Jalen Hurts. 105, Lamar Jackson. 109, Joe Burrow. 110, Caleb, which we can kind of remove from the data because we've seen nothing. 111, A. Rich. 204, Jordan Love. 205, Justin Herbert. 209, Kyler Murray, all right? Now, those names. Patrick Mahomes sat a full fucking season. Lamar Jackson didn't sit a whole season, but the plan was to be that. Harbaugh had no choice. To try to save his job, he put Lamar on the field because Flacco wasn't cutting it. People kind of forget that.
And saved his job.
Saved his job. But Lamar, Mike, was going to sit. Jalen Hurts was supposed to sit for forever, apparently, according to people. He's the perfect parallel.
Yep.
Without the draft capital association with Carson Wentz.
Yep.
Jordan Love sat for an eternity. He's the worst. He's the vision. Jordan Love, the existence of Jordan Love and how wrong that is because of the fact that Green Bay actually extended Rodgers, which plummeted Jordan Love. But his mere existence is what's allowed Penix to fall this far. And the fallacy that those are the same picture. Justin Herbert, without a doctor puncturing a lung, was who knows how long that guy sits. Sitting is not a horrible thing. It actually is more the argument. Like, if I believe this quarterback is good and he gets to sit, and then there's weapons that he gets to go to, wait a minute, I like that better. I might like that better. And I feel like the impatience combined with chasing the receivers, I want to make sure I say this point too. You could be right on the specific player. Brian Thomas may end up being great. Xavier Worthy may end up being great. Keon Coleman may end up being great. But don't be blind to the fact that if you pick the correct one, that the bet itself in its totality is not the right bet. It's not the correct process. And Michael Penix, if he fails, for the record, it still is the correct process. I can point to tons of players that were drafted in that range that had to sit and didn't have, first of all, didn't sit as long as we thought they were going to sit, and ended up being, even in the depressed quarterback market, Mike, top two startup rounds in ADP.
Yep.
Michael Penix is the Neo or the class, for the record.
Here's the list of all the other wide receivers we're still waiting on, or could be waiting on. Jerry Jeudy, JSN, Hollywood Brown, Rashad Bateman, Jahan Dotson, Jalen Reagor, Henry Ruggs, Treylon Burks, Kadarius Toney, Quentin Johnston, Jameson Williams, and N'Keal Harry.
Can I also tell you real quick? Henry Ruggs, was so close to messing this data up.
So close.
His pick was just outside the top 10, right? So
just about there.
Anyway, I think, Mike, this, can I say that we have had some back and forth, some good discussions, but it felt like recently it's kind of like, all right, we're just arguing two different trains that we can't prove anything until we get the data points in the future. This one, as we continue to go through it, this is the most, I feel like, healthy blend of the two different conversations and being able to put it on a platter, which is like, listen, this is digging in to all the data as far as we can really go to have the discussions on betting on the correct receiver is a fine bet, is a great bet. Yeah. But there is a very clear difference in Roma Dunze. And the reason I use that name is because I think errantly as well, people have him as the next tier from Malik and Marv. But there's a very, very big difference from Roma Dunze and Xavier Worthy, or whatever your tier is there. Xavier Worthy, Brian Thomas. And I'll tell you, Mike, I've been pushing that train, and it's a lot harder to paint the picture to people that are just blindly taking receivers right now.
1,000%.
That has been my biggest problem. It's not even that I don't like Brian Thomas Jr. And that when I bet on Brian Thomas Jr., Mike, it's a bet that I know this market is unlikely to sharply correct. It's still wrong, though. Like, that's the thing. The bet for the quarterback that hits, and the numbers say in this range, have a much better chance of hitting, is going to be such a much better bet and more meaningful bet than the receivers in this range. Now, of those 11%, I don't know how to speak to this because I don't know what they've done, but the 11%, like, you could end up landing 1 out of 10, right? 1 out of 10 of those type of bets could hit for you, but you're talking about 9 out of 10 of them are slowly going to bleed value. Now, the only good news is you can probably get out of them for a similar cost.
So
they're a bad bet, I think.
A couple more things before I move on to another cool feature DB added, and we'll go through that one. Sure. Listen, I'm with you, and I think my final determination is, like, I went at this with, like, knives out, you and me fighting this. And I would say your debate between Caleb, Drake May, Jayden Daniels, Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison, those six guys, wherever the fuck you want to take them, take them. Now, I'll say there's some other things that come into play as far as me looking at it. Like, I'm naturally just the quarterback whore, and I want all the quarterbacks that I can have. I'll take them all. I'm going to have many QB hordes. So sure, that part comes into it. But if you're talking just one for one, listen, man, you want to take Marv 101, go for it, right? By all means. You want to take Nabers as the 102 before Caleb, go for it. You want to take Odunze as the 102 before Caleb, go for it. Like, I think that's within the range of outcomes. I think this has helped me realize, especially just seeing the last 5 years and separated by top 10 draft capital, that my debate is now a lot more 50-50, probably even 60-40, swinging towards the Roma Dunze versus Bo Nix pick that I was making there at the 107 or 108. So I think we've come out of this going, like, man, I feel vindicated on this part. You feel vindicated on this part. And I think it's a better discussion. I think we've come to be like, okay, now this is a serious conversation, whether you want to have these two or not. But each side is going to be correct. I think we're both in agreement, though. Like, once you get past those three wide receivers in this class, fucking bets are off, man. Like, there's no reason to be taking them. And furthermore, I want to put the nail in those wide receivers just one more time because we do have the data for it, Adam.
Yeah.
Round two running back, Jonathan Brooks versus any other wide receiver drafted in round one.
Nice.
Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy. Let's make the case for Jonathan Brooks being that next guy, right? Like being ahead of those wide receivers, maybe being in that Bo Nix, Michael Penix discussion of where you draft him. Round two running backs hit a top 10 for the last 5 years. Hit a top 10 or top 12 season at a 27% clip. That's nice. That's more than double the number I gave you for all those round one wide receivers.
Yep.
More than double.
Yep.
And I'm putting it at top 12 because if Jonathan Brooks came out this year and finished as top 12 running back coming off the ACL in his first year, or if he does it next year, holy shit.
Sure.
Holy shit. Like, all bets are off. Now we're talking Breece Hall level, right?
Yeah.
Well, Round two running back.
Right. He'd probably go... Yeah, I mean, you'd make the case that he could get into the... Certainly into that, like, top four round discussion. Not that he couldn't go higher, Mike, but he's certainly in that, like, middle... There's a big convoluted tier that starts in round four and round five. He's safely in that tier and could go higher, to your point. I'm with you.
If you want to go to round or top 24 hit rates, he would be at in the 73% class. In the last 5 years, man, round two running backs have hit top 24 in RB2 season within their first 3 years at a 73% clip. Wide receivers drafted in round one, outside of the S tier guys, 39%. Big difference there, too.
Sure. Right?
Oh, he was a wide receiver, too. Yeah, this guy was an RB2. What the fuck's your point? Corbin needs to find the difference in the two pictures. They're both young. They both carry dynasty value. But one does it at a clip that's twice as likely. That's a big deal.
Sure.
That's a big deal. And I think looking at that tells me that Jonathan Brooks should be in that discussion. Even though I hate running backs and I don't like drafting running backs, should be in that discussion for taking him over Brian Thomas and Xavier Worthy or Ladd or whoever the hell that guy is for you.
Yeah, I think where this discussion really comes down, what it comes down to, at least for me, when I look at it and think about it, you have you have twice as likely of a chance, Mike, of hitting the bet. You could even call it close to three times, honestly. Two and a half, three times, right?
Yeah.
If you hit that, I think the big problem, or let me not say that. Let me not say problem. I think the reason that this is happening, where if you did want to bet on Brooks, Mike, I think this is a huge reason and great point as to why to try to do that. Let's use this example though. Let's say for this season, he, like, realistically, to the data that we're looking at, there's a 27% chance that he's a top 12 running back in the first 3 years, correct? That's what that says?
Yep.
So let's say this year that he's a top 20 running back, with the odds of next year looking like we value him inside the top 12, and there's a very good chance he's going to get to be one of these 27%, right?
Yep.
Look, I think that's probably a realistic painting picture that people can see today. Not saying there aren't other ranges of outcomes, but would you agree, Mike, that that's like a good range of outcomes for Brooks, where he gives us top 20 finish, probably has some weeks where we're like, okay, this guy could be the next coming of this back. Let's say we use that as a hypothetical and a realistic outcome. Where do you think he goes in startups? I'm just curious what you think here right now.
Off of that one?
Yeah, in that exact scenario, yeah.
Ooh, probably third round.
I was going to say, round ADP. I think he's third or fourth turn probably, right? That's what I was going to guess. Okay. Now, I want you to, everybody lock that in. Because, Mike, what I have is the data that says if he sharps, he's the 13th round pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you're betting on is, like, the difference is I'm betting there on getting the guy that in production actually matters and is going to be harder to buy. But I have a very, very different floor because, Mike, these guys don't have to hit shit at receiver. For example, Ladd McConkey, 6'11", Brian Thomas, 6'12". Like, JSN is Wide receiver 48. Now, granted, he was a little highlier thought of as a prospect name, but he's a sixth-round pick. The difference, I think, is the air you're betting on there is that it's probably unlikely that they give you the production type for your team that Brooks can, and this data speaks to that. The safety net is that you probably, without a horrific season, get to the point where Sharps is. But for the record, I just want to make sure this is clear. The worst case scenario of Sharps and the worst case scenario of Quentin Johnson are the same picture. But more likely, the floor is a little bit higher for the receivers. But truth be told, unless you hit the fucking quintessential 10% bet, they're not going to be as relevant for you in production. They're just safer market plays. I just want to make sure that's the clear picture. The running back is probably the better production warp hammer type bet. The receiver is the safer market play. And realistically, you're unlikely to find the one that's the elite producer in that range. I think that's a great conversation.
It is. And I'm just looking at Charbonnet, like his total usage, which I think it could be in there. Like it really could. You could have that with Jonathan Brooks.
Right.
Which then that's your absolute floor and your Quentin Johnston.
Exactly. And that's the point. The receivers in that range, although there's not as many QJs, but the point is the floor isn't really much safer unless if it's a middling one that's safer, but the true floor is not much different than Sharps for the record.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing with Sharps is, at least in relation to QJ, this is kind of off subject, but I've had far more success being able to move Sharps as like a piece in the deal to add in to get something done than I can a QJ, right? Like the stink isn't as bad on him, even though ADP says they're the same dude.
I do think what's interesting is Sharps market. I have found people that are interested in Sharps. A lot of people hate Sharps. But what I will tell you is that there's really not much. Most people hate QJ. You really have to find the truther to buy the QJ.
Yeah, you do. They're very rare. I think it's a conversation with Jonathan Brooks over those wide receivers.
Oh,
but I was trying
to paint the picture. It is definitely a combo, and I'm not saying
because of that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I would say this. I think a lot of people are like, I don't take a first round running back or a running back in the first round in rookie drafts and all that. I think, Mike, I think you should just understand if you take the Jonathan Brooks at the back end of the first or in that range with these receivers, market is probably going to be friendlier to most of the receivers. But the Jonathan Brooks of the world that hit, those are the guys that you're like, man, I ain't trading you this dude right now unless I'm getting a really great tear down and staying relevant at the running back position. So I think it's a good combo. The way I like to play is I don't want to invest in that running back just yet, which is why I'll probably lean the receivers. But I think this conversation is such a great way to highlight. It is a conversation. It's a very real one, I think, too.
Tight ends, just quickly. They were buried before, but DB put in that extra thing where we're don't have to give you 3 years if you did it within your first, so last 5 years.
This time DB got them tombstones, you know?
He did. To do it in their first 3 seasons with first round or top 10 draft capital to hit a top 6 tight end season, still nobody. Nobody's fucking done it at all. To do top 12, though, 100%. If you're a tight end taken in the first round in the last 5 years, to have a top 12 tight end season for whatever that's worth to you within your first 3 seasons, 100% of the tight ends have done that. So there you go. And I can give you the rookie year numbers, how often they are to do it in their rookie year. That top 12 number falls to 40% if you're a top 10 drafted tight end, or 22% if you just go in round one.
Yep.
So not the greatest.
Well, the reason I think when
it's,
I was...
It's okay.
The reason I was saying that, though, is because, Mike, the problem for the Bowers thing is he didn't get top 10.
So he even gets knocked down a tier.
Oh, you know, I'll probably get some people big mad. And I'm not. I'm just throwing some gas on the fire. I'm not actually trying to dunk on Brock Bowers. I'm just speaking to the data point.
Dalton Kincaid was the best one we ever saw out of this whole sample size with just round one guys outside of top 10.
For the record, Mike, I'll be honest with you. Brock Bowers probably, if I was a betting person, I think Brock Bowers finishes higher than Kincaid does in Warp this year.
That's not bad. I can make that bet. All right. I got one here for you.
Okay.
We did rookies over 1 year Warp. So the last part that we're going to touch on here, and then we'll bounce out, is rookies who failed to crack 1.0 Warp in their rookie year, but then did it in their second year. The bounce backs. To returns.
Now I bounce back.
Round one quarterbacks, Adam. 31% of the clip. If they didn't hit a 1.0 warp in their rookie year, in their second year, they did it 31% of the time. Leading the way out of all positions. So you're most likely, at least just to look at this graph here, you're most likely to do it at the quarterback position.
Is there no S tier here for the receivers and the
quarterbacks? No S tier.
Okay.
Maybe he's working on that one yet.
Got it. All right. I just wanted to make sure.
We've had to add so much shit to this stuff. But just in general, if you're a round one quarterback and you do not hit 1.0 warp in your rookie year, 31% of the time you can rebound into year two and hit that mark. Round one running backs, 19% of the time. And this is all draft classes going back to 2007, by the way. And then wide receivers, 22% of the time. Second best, 22% of the time. If you just want to look at all the numbers, if you were drafted in round one, your odds of doing it, 23%. So if you were a, we didn't really care about you, couldn't hit basically a top 100 player in Warp in your rookie year, you only got a 23% chance if you were drafted in round one to do it the following year. So how about that? What was that term for? Face planters. There it is. I had to find it there. If you are a face planter, essentially, if you're a face planter, regardless of position, but just looking at draft capital, your odds of doing it the next year are 1 in 4. I don't know if I want to take that bet, Adam. I would say that the 1 in 4 thing would tell you that fuck out of here. I'm good.
I'm just curious if. Do you think that speaks to Bryce Young?
It might. But if you're going to make any case about it, you can look at just the quarterbacks and say his odds are more 1 in 3.
Sure. Even still. Yep.
1 in 3 versus 1 in 4. Maybe I shouldn't have been buying so much Bryce Young.
Well, no. I think, Mike, the reason I wanted to point that one out is that I think the bet of Bryce Young, and I think this is why where you're buying it is much more reasonable. The bet of Bryce Young, I think, now becomes, this data really speaks to, I'm now betting on him as a player in his situation, and the clock is right now. So, for example, if he has a very similar year that he did last year in year two, that's an asset that will buckle. But the one thing about it is if the 1 in 3 does come to fruition, the pass that Bryce Young is going to get will be probably lengthy. If he comes back and has a great bounce back season to this point, he's over 1 in warp, people going to be buying into Bryce Young like they never saw his rookie year.
They will. They'll be hopping on board.
Big time on the train.
How about this, though, for let's get outside of round one draft capital, though. Your favorite second round prospect, you know, your Marvin Mims. I feel bad because I always dunk on this guy all the time, but wide receivers do it at a 17% clip, but just as a whole, second round draft capital players only do it at 15%. It's not likely to happen.
Interesting.
Not likely to happen at all.
No bueno.
Not at all. Not at all. It feels bad for him, don't it?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Be telling yourself a story. And then if you want to get even grosser, anything that's round three or less, it's single digits or zeros. Never happened.
Right.
You do got one round seven guy in here. 1% chance. A 1% chance out of 217 people with round 17 draft cap. Round seven draft cap.
Yep.
Going back to 2007, 1% of them have failed to do anything in year one, but then given you a top 100 season the following year.
Not great, Bob.
Not great at all. I thought that was very interesting that he added that in. Right, yeah, just to really put the nail in the coffin of all that. Well, you just wait till next year. You just wait till next year. I think even with Bryce Young, you brought that up because I want to tell myself a story at quarterback, and I still still think the story's not that great. The story's not that great. Maybe it's the same shit.
I think the data there that my biggest takeaway here, because the reality of the day three and round seven, I think that picture is all still for me. If I get a production window, which gives me a good chance of selling, unless they're doing it a historic clip, see Puka Nacua, I'm selling, man. And just be careful betting on Puka. Is he earning? Is this person you got earning targets at a historic number? Catching passes, receiving yards at a historic number? Probably not meeting the outlier criteria. Day three guys probably a sell. But the biggest thing I'm thinking that this speaks to, Mike, is this really speaks to face planners. This isn't just a receiver thing. Now, the running back, the percentages, I guess, when I'm starting to look at this, I probably don't care about, other than the fact that it just means that they didn't get on the field. So if we're running back to the Sharps thing, like, what am I going to do now with Sharps? Unless I can find a suitor that's going to give me something decent, probably going to have to just move on or just hold and keep, right? But the data here, I think, speaks to Mike. I think you're on mute. I think you were trying to talk there. But,
No. I was going to point out, too, just so context full of it.
Yeah.
If you look at last year for this exactly that Ed Berry pulled data off, mm-hmm. super vanilla, your quarterback who's like a 1.0 warp, I just want people to know what the range is for like the quarterback to hit it. And I'll go through the other positions too, so you kind of get an idea of that player. Sure. Justin Fields was over that mark last year, 1.09. Derek Carr was under it at 0.88. So that's QB 17 and 18 in warp. That's like the threshold we're talking about having to hit.
Got it.
Under 1.0 warp or being above
1.0. Sure. I think what this data, though, really shows me is that when I say face planner, like, we talk a lot about the receiver. And I think what this data speaks to in general is that, not that a face planner can't end up working out, but they're all not great bets, basically. Like, probably need to start, if you're going to bet on a face planner, you better be cheap enough. A lot of them probably fit the bill because the cost goes down dramatically for face planners in any position. But there is no really position that's like, nah, I'm going to bet on the face planner. Like, this really speaks to cost. You better be convicted as hell and be very cautious about buying too many face planners of anything. Because,
yeah.
Not shockingly, if they didn't get on the field year one, or if they got on the field and were terrible year one, odds are going to be more to the fact that that's more likely what they continue to do. The ones that break that mold, 1-3 is your best case scenario, more like 1-4, you know, for most of them.
So your running backs last year is going to be somewhere between 26 and 32. I mean, it's a real tight range there.
RB 26 to 32, yeah.
Correct. So like your Zach Moss and Chuba Hubbard, for example, are two opposite ends of the spectrum. And then your wide receivers, well, pretty low bar here. Tank Dell was just over that number, missing games. So he's at 1.071. Christian Kirk just under it, 0.946. That's wide receiver 38 to 39. So if you really want to take into context, like, the bar is pretty fucking low right. for wide receivers. Like, really fucking low for wide receivers.
Right.
Like, just be wide receiver 40 is all I'm asking you. And it's telling you that that's usually not likely to happen for a wide receiver who couldn't do it in year one.
Makes me realize that my JSN bet is a lot more conviction than I want to argue for.
Tight ends, the bar is a lot higher. George Kittle and Cole Kmet. So tight ends 6 and 7 last year. It's your cutoff point.
Yep.
So tight ends, maybe you can make a case. They take longer to develop. And like the bar is set so high. If you want to just like, hey, lower it down, you can talk yourself into a story, but it's probably still not a good bet. You see 8%, 4%, 5% for those guys.
Now, I actually think, though, Mike, the thing is, like, that's why, to me, I talk all the time. Like, I want to buy the cheaper tight ends. Whether these guys come down enough in price and I'll buy them, or it's round two, round three guy, like, I'm just buying the cheaper tight ends in general. So that,
just give me the cheapo.
If those guys in that first round range, they come down low enough, fine. I'm basically willing to bet on guys that are older anyway. Like, I'm looking to probably have a lot of my tight ends in year 3, 4, 5, 6 at their career.
Love it. Love it, Adam. I thought it was interesting. Big shout out again to DB for doing all this incredible work, giving me something I can always point back and reference, you know, when I get in a random argument in Discord or on Twitter. Like, all right, well, speaking of it, here, I got the data for you. It shows you you're fucking wrong, but keep going with it.
I love that people are, you know, they got DB jumping through some real hoops over here, man. DB just keeps doing it. You know,
let the man rest now. He's Jimmy Butler. Let him rest. Let him rest.
I love it, man. This was good. This was a good, man, I don't think we've ever done a three-part series on 4D, by the way, too. So really good one.
First one. First one in the books. Done. I'm done talking about it. We'll talk about something else next week. I don't know what yet, but we'll figure it out.
We'll get you a new one. But I think this one was worth three episodes. And what's interesting, Mike, is it's kind of like, you know, if you're a doctor, like you just kind of keep pressing until you get to where it hurts. It feels like we found the data point, the sticking point of where the split comes. Whatever side you are, I think it's very realistic. You could argue either one, but I think we're at the point where the data at least shows us that there's great cases on the receivers in the certain, in the protected range, in the top 10 range, the elite range, S tier, as you say, versus the quarterbacks with that type of same draft capital. So that conversation's real, but if you're betting on Brian Thomas at a very, very high clip, here's your, you know, public service announcement to consider selling some of those shares at the current wide receiver 28 price, which right now, I mean, realistically, you can get out of that for, you could even just lessen your bet if you're super exposed there at a negligible range. So just a word to the wise, because remember, when your league mates are playing chess, play 4D chess.
That's going to do it. We're about out of here. We love y'all. We'll see y'all back here same time, same place next week. And a reminder, please rate and review the show if you like us. Leave us a good rating. Leave us a good review. Love y'all. Right here. Peace.
Peace.